The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On today's show, reversing the war on drugs.
So my name is Sarah Reyes. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a policy analyst at the Texas Center for Justice and Equity with a focus on drug policy along with youth justice as well. Our mission here at TCJE, short for our very long name, is to end mass incarceration. And we do that through policy transformation at the state and county level. We have some work going on in Bexar County, and we have some work going on in Dallas County as well, along with here in Travis County. So we both do criminal justice reform at our local and state level. And so that's kind of what we do.
Sarah, you're a co-author of a new report entitled Reversing the War on Drugs in Texas, Prioritizing Real Public Health and Safety for Texans. What's your goal in issuing this report?
Yeah, so I think the main goal in writing this report and just throughout as we were coming up what to really talk about was really shifting the narrative. And that's really what the whole report is about and wanting to get this information out. And so shifting that narrative that drug use should be criminalized, so that drug use is a moral failure, or, you know, people who use drugs just aren't good people, right? Like, those are the stigmas that are like flying around here and the reason that we have so many people in jails for possession of substances, right? And so really wanting to switch that narrative to, hey, like, if people are using drugs problematically, this needs to be answered in a public health way. And if they're not, you know, people who aren't ready to use, I mean, who aren't ready for treatment, they don't need treatment, right? If it's not negatively impacting their life or other people's lives, right? And so really just wanting to like humanize individuals who are using drugs and really bring light to how Texas is addressing the war on drugs here. And as I'm sure we'll talk about later about kind of like the programs and the way Texas does address this, it's just not working right. And we continue to keep using those types of methods and criminalization. And it's been last 20, 30 years, they've been using the same things and nothing has changed, right? And only made it worse and only continuing to over-criminalize certain people, right? And so that was kind of the idea of really wanting to have these conversations, because people don't want to talk about drug users or people who use drugs as like human beings, right? People don't want to acknowledge that they should be treated with humility and should be treated with respect and dignity, just like anybody else who doesn't use drugs. And we are just trying to flip that script about these people are people regardless if they use drugs, and we should be treating them as so, and should be preventative and should be productive of the methods that we use, rather than let's react to whatever is happening, and rather than let's punish people for something that in certain situations they don't really even have a choice. You know, if you do have an addiction, that's not your fault that you were, you know, kind of predisposed to having this type of developmental disorder, right? And so really just wanting to get that out, and it was more of like wanting to put this out to have a conversation starter, to have people like put these ideas in people's heads that maybe they weren't really thinking about before, or and not to say like wanting to change people's minds, because I think that's really hard, but wanting to just kind of meet people where they're at and really show what Texas and the war on drugs looks like.
I like the way that you've structured it. You've got the myths, as you were saying, the notion that people are addicted by choice, these preconceived notions that people have about people who use drugs. I mean, the very dehumanizing the very dehumanization of them in the first place, and then of us in the first place, and like that. And then you go into the impact of the war on drugs. Now, could you tell me about some of the impact?
Yeah. So thinking specifically about just like the war on drugs, right? Like, there's this overcriminalization of specific people, right? And so we have found that Black and white people use drugs at the same rates, but Black people are arrested 5 times more than white people are for the same thing, right? And so one of the impacts also obviously is a racial bias that we have for people who are using drugs and who we're deciding to criminalize. And that's really that's brings me to a point of like in within our report, we have this case study that our organization actually did with grassroots leadership, the civil rights clinic at UT, and Texas Harm Reduction. And it was really cool thing that we put together. It was like the storyboard. It's not in the report, but we mention it in the case study about the over-policing and the war on drugs, which shows like a perfect picture of how the war on drugs are impacting people, right? And so all these communities. And so it really talks about like this hotspot policing and how like people in these communities are not really the ones using the substances, but like they, we have found that most people here in Travis County were coming from outside communities into these lower income communities that have a lot of like lower or lower income or lack economic opportunities and lower educational levels and things like that. And so we found that like part of that was policing that was hurting those communities, right? So again, back to this hotspot policing, these police were in these neighborhoods because a lot of low level possession of drug arrests were happening. And because these police were in these neighborhoods, saturating these neighborhoods, we found that there were a higher rate of traffic stops here. And there were a lot of over criminalization of like trespassing and like loitering and people getting arrested for things that honestly really don't matter, right? Like just anything that a police officer could sit down and like arrest you and cite you for, right? And along with that comes a criminal record, right? And there's a ton of collateral consequences that come with that. And so going to these lower income neighborhoods, arresting people, having these criminal records, it just turns into the cycle of poverty, right? Because you have a criminal record, you can't get employment, you can't get an education, you know, some people can't get into the military, like things like this, like that prevents people from actually thriving, right? And these communities from thriving. And so I think the war on drugs has really impacted those communities in that way of like these communities are being over-policed and being the ones that are suffering from something that may not even be actually happening in their neighborhood, but are really feeling the consequences of that. And so I think just a big thing of that is like people aren't just able to live their lives the way they want to after, you know, they come in contact with the police because of substance use, right? Like small possession. And I think it's important to note that like when we're talking about small possession, just to put it in perspective, it is about the size of a like sugar packet that you put in your coffee, little Splenda, right? Or whatever alternative sugar you use. And so I really think that's one of the largest impacts is policing and what that leads to within these communities. And so that is what we have found in that case study that we refer to in Austin. I think if we were to probably do that in any other county too, we would see the same thing, that this, you know, over-criminalization and hotspot policing of these Black and Brown communities are actually depriving these communities of so many resources. And so I think that's one of the greatest impacts, you know, doing all this research and seeing that the war on drugs has really affected those within these communities.
Talking before, one of the clearance rates, a lot of people in the public don't necessarily understand the clearance rate. The idea is that you've got reported crime and then you've got the offenses that police and the authorities say that they have managed to clear. They found someone, not that they found someone guilty, but that they've managed to get someone indicted. And it's clearance rates, and it's a really important measure, right? And I was talking earlier, I live up in the state of Oregon, and we've actually stopped reporting on the clearance rates because the numbers are just so bad. And that's the thing about the drug enforcement. On the one hand, you could have somebody arguing, well, if it means that they're preventing all these crimes, then everything's, they're not preventing any crimes and they're not solving any crimes and are actually taking resources away from maybe where you would want those resources. It's so frustrating. Sorry, that was just me on a short rant. But
No, and you're completely right. And I feel like people don't understand that, or really even just see it like thinking of in this world of like policy and stuff, like we all understand that, right? Like we all see that, but like outside world, like people are, you know, again, back to like the stigma of like people who use drugs are bad and like they have no good intentions. And it's like, that's like really not the case, right? But, you know, being arrested and, you know, coming out with a criminal record like causes so much more pain to communities than it does anything else, right? It's actually exacerbating everything that, you know, you're thinking is happening before that, right? And so I think it's like a really good point, because I don't think people really understand that. And really, I don't think people really understand the severity to what getting arrested really leads like to for the rest of your life. Because people think people can come out of jail or prison and like, just like, you've been reformed or rehabilitated, like you can go on with your life and like do better, right? But it's has made the state of Texas, and I'm sure around the country, has made it completely impossible to do so, right? And so, no, I think you bring up a great point.
This is a conversation with Sarah Reyes. She's a policy analyst with the Texas Center for Justice and Equity. She's also co-author of a new report entitled Reversing the War on Drugs in Texas, Prioritizing Real Public Health and Safety for Texans. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. It's not just, of course, people who use drugs who are being affected by this drug war. It's because it's using marginalized communities, it's young people, it's women, and it's also people with mental health needs, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. That's certainly something that we've up here in Oregon, up in my home of Portland. That's certainly a thing that we've seen, a great deal of over-policing and really, really harsh, violent treatment of people in those situations. What's it like down there in Texas?
Yeah, so kind of just thinking about, you know, that whole section of our report, we do talk about youth and women and people with IDD and mental health issues. And so, like, kind of starting with the youth here, Texas has recently seen just an increase in arrests for youth and being sent to, like, these, like, alternative schools. We call them JJAEPs, like, they're juvenile justice alternative education programs. And that's kind of where individuals go and they get taken when they, like, do something in school that they're not supposed to, right? So they get removed from school and they get put into a different environment. And so that's kind of what we touched on in the report, talking about really the war on drugs has been hammering down on youth. And so, like, this whole trend and fad about, like, vaping has really had an impact on youth, right? And kids at this, you know, I'm 23. I was in high school, like, about 5-6 years ago, right? Like, not knowing anything really about the law, right? Not knowing what, you know, maybe I can get away with or couldn't. And vaping gets you a felony, right? And so you could end up with a felony as a kid in school, meaning that, like, 15, 16, whatever. And here in Texas, we try kids at 17 as adults, right? So you're in high school, you're 17, you have vape on you, you can be tried as an adult. And again, with those collateral consequences, that is going to stay with you forever, right? And so, you know, kids use, I think vapes right now, personally, are just, like, a fun kind of thing. It's just, they've made them look so fun and they just made them look so attractive. And, like, I don't know, like, at this age, like, you don't really know and you don't think about the consequences that happen, right? But Texas has very much taken advantage of that. And we have seen an increase in arrests for things like that, for drug use. And kind of thinking about how Texas deals with that is not really looking at people as a whole, right? Like, why do you think these kids are using substances? Like, what's kind of going on in their life that they are using substances? Is this something that is going on at home? Or is this, maybe it was a one-time thing, right? And in the beginning of our report, we kind of talk about, like, people age out of drug use. Like, it is something that you are curious about when you're young and you're curious about, you know, when you're growing up. And, you know, most people just kind of stop kind of using, like, things like that. And so it's been really affecting those in school. And I've seen it too. I grew up in an SAISD, like, going to public school in San Antonio, and, you know, every little thing people were getting arrested for, especially, like, you know, having a joint on them and stuff. And, like, I think it comes back to, like, the public doesn't really understand what is happening in these schools. Like, these kids are getting taken out to be put in a different environment, taken out from their normal schedules, or being, like shoved against the wall for having a vape and having dogs come in. Like, all this stuff is happening. And, like, you're 15, 16 and this is happening, and that's traumatic, right? And really just mostly affecting Black and brown kids again, right? Again, back to Black and white people use drugs at the same rate, but are getting arrested and in trouble at different rates. So kind of just thinking about the youth, vape right now has been a huge thing that is affecting kids, because you also don't, like, I mean, you also don't even know what's in a vape. I don't even know if people can explain what's in a vape. And, you know, so it becomes, there's, like, a line, and it comes to, like, there's lack of education too. And that's, you know, we'll talk about that definitely in the recommendations and stuff of part of this report. But yeah, in that aspect of youth, but also kind of moving on to, like, talking about the impact on women, there's continuously been just a rise in rate of arrest for women here in Texas. And mostly for drug use, right? And again, Texas doesn't step back and look at the overall things that are happening in people's lives, right? Like a lot of women are responsible for kids on their own, or a lot of women don't have these economic opportunities, or, you know, there's still a lot of things that are exacerbating people's lives. So why are these individuals using substances? And women are most likely to be prescribed opioids at a higher rate than men are, right? And so just like things like this that, like, they seem so small, but have really made such an impact on women here in Texas. And I mean, the opioid crisis all over the nation, right? And just like looking at how Texas has handled it, has been to incarcerate people, right? And has been to do, you know, go to the most punitive measure we possibly could, instead of looking at this and really being empathetic about what is going on and what is happening. And so I'm kind of also talking about moving on to like people with the impact of war on drugs with people with IDD and mental health issues. This was actually kind of a harder part to research in the report, because Texas does not do a great job of reporting a lot of this stuff. And so for me, this was a little hard to really wrap my head around, because a lot of individuals within the system and who are using drugs do have like co-occurring disorders, or are using substances for, you know, whatever reason it is, especially individuals with IDD. But again, there's not a ton of data on this, and it was really hard to kind of find this. It's not really tracked in jails or prisons or whatever. So that section is a little general for us, but it really just comes down to people who are more vulnerable are being the ones that are most attacked, right? And using this in the way Texas incarcerates people for drug use. So just kind of the impact that just it has on everybody, right? It's not just impacting one section of people or one identity of people, you know?
Right on. A lot of drug use, at least, is the result of trauma at one time or another, and the kind of treatment that people are put through, and the kind of things that people are put through, and the kind of folks that some authorities might decide are just easier to push around are the people who are going to be so traumatized by the system. Folks, you're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. My guest is Sarah Reyes. She's a policy analyst with the Texas Center for Justice and Equity. She's also co-author of a new report entitled Reversing the War on Drugs in Texas, Prioritizing Real Public Health and Safety for Texans. Let's get to your recommendations, because you've got some, you've laid out some good ideas for what should be done moving forward. Let's start at the top. You're calling for decriminalization of people who use drugs.
Yeah. So just a little background, kind of how we got here. I think that so last year during session of the legislative session here in Texas, happens every other year, there was a day that they decided that they were going to put all drug related bills on one day. Right. And so it was about 20 plus probably bills, you know, all different variations of stuff, but had something to do with drug use. And me and Alicia, actually, who the other co-authors were there, I was there to testify on a few bills. I was there for about 15 to 16 hours until I was actually able to testify on the ones that we were for, and nothing actually came out of that day. Nothing. So they didn't pass anything, I think, except Texas decided that they were going to expand the use of medicinal marijuana, which is, you know, it's great, but we had 20 plus things going on and being asked for that actually I felt like wasn't being listened to, because it was things also that we were there to, you know, we were for, were like reducing the level at which possession would be from like a state jail felony to like whatever, like a class A, or bringing a class B down to a class C for drug paraphernalia, things like that is what we were kind of there for. And so after that day, I think we realized that like there was no use in really asking for the smallest stuff. It was time that we just went for all of it, because That's what we want. We were just not going to compromise anymore. And that day, you know, we sat there and we were there. We were ready to, you know, say our piece. And it took a really long time, and nothing came out of it, right? And so I think this is our recommendations. We're hoping to be bold and really progressive about stuff, because it's what needs to happen. And we're here to ask for it all. And so really just decriminalizing drug use, you know, kind of just the way, would love to see the way it is in Oregon, right? As possession of substances, like whatever that may be to somebody, right? And so just thinking about also kind of, we have a quote in here that says small possessions of marijuana is not the type of violations that we want to stockpile jails with. That was from Greg Abbott in January 2022, right? But that's exactly what we're doing. And so it's really interesting that, you know, I think these lawmakers know that this isn't working. And so we're here to just kind of ask for it all. And so that's definitely, we would love to see that going. We were basing off of also kind of what Oregon was doing as well. And I've been following, you know, hoping to get some data from that soon when it, you know, kind of few years and see what those impacts are. But I think that's where this really comes from, is we want to see that happen. And we want people to not be going into state jails or prisons for their choice of, you know, drug use or what that is. And so that's kind of where that one came for. It's really just trying to be as bold as we can.
It's the only way to do it. I mean, there's, you know, you have to ask for what you want rather than, I mentioned that one first because I think that's, you got to do exactly that. You got to ask, you got to demand what you bloody want and what's necessary. That's, So tell me about a few of the other recommendations in your report.
Yeah, so the next one is the phasing out of the use of state jail and substance abuse felony punishment programs. So state jail, most people who are in state jails right now in Texas are for small possessions, again, less than a gram of substances, or like property offenses. And so in 2019, there were about 15,000 people in the state jail. About over 40% of them were in there for, again, like a little packet of substance, of like personal use substance on them, right? And that's a state jail felony, follows you for your whole life, right? Again, yeah. So we are wanting to abolish state jail here. We'd love to see that. These people, these individuals in here, personal use is not a problematic amount. And we see it as kind of a waste of money for, you know, this has been going on for 20 plus years, having this state jail system, and nothing has come out of it. They have the highest rearrest rate. So it's 63% of people are rearrested within 3 years of being released from the state jail. I don't know about you, but any program that would be failing over more than half of the time doesn't seem like a program worth funding, right? And it's not. And so that's one of the programs we are hoping to, would love to not see exist anymore, right? And then kind of just going over the Safe P is the acronym for it. We have like kind of a Safe P section in our report. It's before the recommendations, and it's basically a diversion program where people who have been arrested multiple times for drug use are sent to get like in prison treatment. So it's still like you're within a prison and getting this type of treatment. And we did a qualitative research paper about this that you can see on our website, called the Layers of Trauma, Layers of Treatment, Using Patient Experiences to Reform Texas in Prison Substance Use Treatment Programs. It's long, but it's on our website. And just found that, you know, these imprisoned environments don't work. And people who are being sent here also, like you mentioned in the beginning, like don't want to get treatment, don't need treatment. And you can't force somebody to get into treatment when they're not ready to, right? That's not successful, and you won't have any success with this. And so that's just kind of like one of the programs that they have here for like diversion in Texas that is just, we have not seen to be working. And then the next one we have is talking about harm reduction, which I think has now become such a huge, huge thing that we've been seeing like everybody talk about. You know, John Oliver on his little segment talked about it, and it was awesome. You know, we were planning to release this report, and it sounded exactly like what we were talking about. And it's really exciting to see things like that, those conversations happening. But here in Texas, harm reduction is pretty much impossible because we have, you know, laws against things like drug paraphernalia, which means that we can't have syringe programs, and we can't have things like testing strips or anything that would help somebody, you know, make sure they're getting, using drugs in the right way, right? In the most healthiest way. And so along with that, our recommendations are to have syringe programs. There's actually one in San Antonio that was authorized to happen in 2007, but just didn't get funding until this past year. And they're starting to do harm reduction and starting to give like syringes out and clean needles and things like that. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that goes. And hopefully, you know, with that success that they're seeing, so they said they served about 2,900 people and saved 90 lives with just Narcan, right? And so that's really awesome to see. Would love to see that Texas wide, but again, we have laws that prohibit things like that. And just talking about things like evidence-based education around substance use. So kind of like thinking back to when we were talking about the youth, I don't know about you, but I don't remember really ever talking about substances when I was in school. And that was about, again, like 5 or 6 years ago, or like anything really about it. It really comes down to Texas is like abstinence only, just say no type state, right? And that doesn't work, right? You need to be giving people the full information so that way they can make their decisions based off of the information that is given to them. It doesn't work when kids are curious about, you know, drug use and what to do in these situations if someone does overdose, or, you know, they get in a situation they don't want to be in. Like, we don't give anybody proper information about like what that looks like. And so that's some of the things, like, you know, would love to see change in public or, you know, just school education around drug use. And again, talking about like an expanding the Good Samaritan law, there was one passed last session, but it wasn't really that great. It comes down to like, if you have a certain amount of like convictions from past drug uses, you'll still, if you call like 911 because someone's overdosing, you could still be implicated for like that situation. And so we'd love to see a complete amnesty of that, right? Like, it is literally a life and death situation where people are having to second guess calling 911 because they might be arrested for being in that situation, right? Like, that's not healthy for anybody. That is not saving anybody's lives, and that's only hurting everybody involved. And so hopefully this next session, that is something that we could get, you know, passed, and would love to see that. And our kind of our fourth main overview of our recommendation is expanding healthcare. Just things about like expanding Medicaid. Texas is one of the very few states that have yet to expand Medicaid, and would just give a lot of lower income people access to treatments that they want and or need. And, you know, increasing access to Narcan. Narcan is still retail, really expensive here. I don't know what it's like in other states, but it could be upwards of about $100. But there are organizations within in Texas, and I know here even in Travis County, that do give out like Narcan, and, you know, you can get some, but it's still not something that's really accessible to someone who might be using some type of substance and is like, maybe I want to go get some Narcan just to be safe, right? It's just not, it's not reasonable. And then increase access to medicated assistant treatment, and MAT you know, whether you're going to doctors or clinics or whatever that looks like, having that type of treatment, is life-saving, right? And then kind of our last one, it's enact and expand justice and community reinvestment initiatives. Alicia actually worked a lot on this, so I don't have too much like detail to say about it because it's more of Alicia's thing. But in Houston, they started a justice reinvestment initiative. And so Houston decided to give so much money that they were going to put towards community resources instead of like punitive options. And so wanting to really see the community being used as an option rather than somebody being sent to prison for whatever, or jail for whatever.
This has been a conversation with Sarah Reyes, a policy analyst with the Texas Center for Justice and Equity. She's co-author of a new report entitled Reversing the War on Drugs in Texas, Prioritizing Real Public Health and Safety for Texans. And that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.